Go ahead and get your Bibles out, if you will, and turn over to the book of Exodus, chapter 19. Exodus, chapter 19, and we'll begin there here in just a minute or two. Several weeks ago, I was driving, and as I typically do, had my radio on, just kind of as background. And a commercial came on that I had heard I don't know how many times before. And as I listened to the end of that commercial, I said, did she say what I thought she said? And so I made a point the next time that commercial came on to listen very closely to it. It was an advertisement, basically, for a local church in this area. And the girl who, in a very peppy voice, was talking and saying all of the things that this church offered and all of the activities and all of the clubs and all the organizations, went through this list and at the end of it offered an invitation in saying, come join us as we grow the church of God. And as I thought about that statement, I began to realize that within that statement, there was a whole lot of what we find as the attitude toward religion, toward God, and toward the church. And as I contemplated that idea more, I realized that that was an idea that has led so many people down the wrong road. This morning, I want to talk about that statement. Come join us as we grow the church of God. But now, in order to talk about that statement, we got to do a little foundation building. We've got to look at some things that God has said. And so for the first few minutes of our lesson this morning, I want to kind of lay the groundwork, kind of prepare the foundation for discussing this statement that was made. And as we do that, the first idea that I want us to talk about is God's sovereignty. Sovereignty is a word that we don't hear a lot used in everyday conversation, unless you're like me and you teach something like government every day. Sovereignty is a very governmental word, because what it means is when you are a sovereign nation or you are a sovereign state within the United States, it means that there are certain things that belong to you that cannot be taken away. Even the youngest among us who can read can look at a sign that says no trespassing. And they may the first time or two turn up to their mother and dad and say, what does that mean? What does that word trespass mean? No trespassing. What is that statement all about? And a parent might explain, perhaps just one time, that means that belongs to someone else. We're not allowed there. A government says, these are our borders. You're not able to come. This is our authority. You cannot take it away from us. And I would suggest to you that just as any government or just as any landowner who might post that sign, God has said, I am a sovereign God and there are certain things on which you are not allowed to trespass. Let me give you an example going way back, looking here in the book of Exodus chapter 19. As God prepared Israel to begin their journey into nationhood, He said, one thing I want you to understand very clearly is the sovereignty of your God and the sovereignty of the law that He's given to you. So here in chapter 19, we find God preparing to give that law. And look at the commands that He gives by Moses. Verse 10 beginning. The Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments and be ready for the third day. For on the third day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. And you shall set limits for the people all around, saying, take care not to go up into the mountain or touch the edge of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall be put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall be stoned or shot, whether beast or man. He shall not live. When the trumpet sounds a long blast, they shall come up on the mountain. God says, I want you to understand something. I'm about to come down on this mountain. I'm about, in a partial way, to reveal myself to you. But Moses, you tell the people that this mountain is sovereign because I am here. And therefore, they are not to even touch this mountain. Was God serious about it? God says, if they ignore my sovereignty in this, they will surely die. God made the point in giving that law that His sovereignty for Him, as well as for the law that He gives, must be respected. That the sovereignty and respect for that law were absolute requirements when it came to obedience to Him. Now let's fast forward just a bit. God has given this law, made it very clear. We go then over to Leviticus chapter 10, and you're a step ahead of me, you know what we're going to find here. Leviticus chapter 10, of all people, the priest should have recognized the sovereignty of God. That when God gives a law, when God gives instructions, it is to be followed exactly like He says. And so we come to chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, and we find a case of trespassing here. It says, "Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it and laid incense on it and offered unauthorized fire before the Lord, which He had not commanded them. And fire came down from the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord." Now, what has God tried to address all along? Israel, I am your God. The law that I give you is the law I expect you to follow. I am sovereign. It is sovereign. Don't change it. And what do Nadab and Abihu do? They offered strange fire before the Lord. And I think verse 3 illustrates for us God's attitude when He says, "Thus Moses said to Aaron, this is what the Lord has said, among those who are near me, I will be sanctified, and before all the people, I will be glorified." And a credit to Aaron, we're then told he held his peace about this situation. God didn't say, "Now I really want this to happen. I hope it's going to happen." He said, "I will be sanctified. I will be glorified." No question about it. And so when Nadab and Abihu walked past the no trespassing sign, disregarded the sovereignty of God, God in a very dramatic fashion said, "This will not do." Very quickly, let's notice where else God makes this. Where God makes the point about the sovereignty of what He has said. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2, "You shall not add to the word that I command you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God that I commanded you." Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 32. "Everything that I command you, you shall be careful to do. You shall not add to it or take from it." Book of Proverbs chapter 30, verses 5 and 6. "Every word of God proves true. He is a shield to those who take refuge in Him. Do not add to His words, lest He rebuke you and you be found a liar." Look as well at what we find in the book of Revelation, chapter 22, verse 18. "I warn everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book. If anyone adds to them, God will add to him the plagues described in this book." Now, if I gave you a pop quiz right now and said, "God said, do not blank to His word," I believe everybody could make 100. What's the point that He's made? He said, "When I have said something, don't change it." Whether you lived under the law of Moses, whether you were living in the time when Solomon was on the throne, whether you were living in the time when John was sitting on the Isle of Patmos, or whether you're living in the 21st century, God has said, "I am sovereign. I will be sanctified. I will be glorified. Don't change what I've told you." Which brings us to the second stone in our foundation. Sometimes we have a problem when we think we know better than God. There are occasions when we think that the way we want to do something is actually going to have better results. And I suggest to you, if we ever think we know better than God, it's time to think again. Note with me, as we consider this, of the problems that will occur when we believe our ideas are better than God's. You ever worked at a job where somebody knew how to do your job better than you did? At least they thought they did. You ever worked at a place where somebody says, oh, don't do it that way? Now, I'm not saying that we don't need to listen and improve ourselves. I'm talking about where someone who has absolutely no idea about something tries to tell you how to do it. You know how aggravating that is? You ever wondered how God feels when we try to do that to Him? When here is the sovereign and almighty God in heaven who has created us and every living thing and the earth itself, and we try to say, you know, Lord, I think we ought to do it a different way. We can look at the digressions in the past 2,000 years from New Testament Christianity and see what a temptation that has been. However, it goes back much further than that, doesn't it? Almost since the creation of time, we have had people saying to the Lord, I think I've got a better way. I want to just give you one illustration today. Let's look back to 1 Samuel chapter 13. 1 Samuel chapter 13. I tell you, I sympathize with Saul. I understand the plight that he was in. In this situation, he's ready to go up against a fierce enemy, and his soldiers are cowering, and they're running away. They're deserting him. They're hiding in the caves and all around. But let's notice what happens here as he waits for Samuel, who doesn't come. And a sacrifice has got to be offered before they can go into this battle. It says he waited, verse 8, 12, or 7 days, the time appointed by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal. And the people were scattering from him, so Saul said, bring the burnt offering here to me and the peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. And as soon as he had finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came and Saul went out to greet him. I'm going to tell you something. Saul would be a very respected man for doing this amongst most people. In fact, if he were living in modern times, you know, we might be encouraging him. Hey, why don't you visit Iowa? Why don't you visit New Hampshire? We need a president like you. Somebody who can take action when the time comes. Think again. Samuel arrives. Look at verse 11. Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, when I saw the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines had mustered at Michmash. Typical of Saul, right, in his latter years. The people were scattering. You didn't come. The Philistines are attacking. I had to do something. Now, I want you to notice this from the New King James translation. The next verse finishes his statement. He says, I thought. Now the Philistines have come down against me at Gilgal and have not sought the Lord's favor, so I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering. Now remember, God had not instructed this. God had said, there is a way that I expect for sacrifices to be offered. There are people who I've designated to do that. But Saul said, because you didn't come and because the people were fleeing and the Philistines were mustering together, I felt like this was the right thing to do. And the fact that mankind would have applauded this, and while we might sympathize with the difficult situation Saul was in, God did not. This was a test of his king. Would he obey? And Saul failed that test. As we consider that, I want us to note that feelings are helpful to us. I don't think we need to ignore feelings at all. I believe that is a God-given part of our makeup. But feelings are only helpful to us when those feelings are tempered in God's ways, in God's plans. You see, if I feel like something is the right thing to do, but it does not correspond with what God says, I better leave that feeling alone because it's not from God. Just to illustrate our point, Think about one proverb, chapter 29 and verse 11. A fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. You see, both of these men are expressing feelings, but one is expressing it in a godly way, and the other is not. When we allow what we think to trump what God has said, we've crossed the line of acceptability. Note one other proverb with me, chapter 3, verses 5 through 7. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes, fear the Lord and turn away from evil. God says there are times when you are going to think you know better than me. Don't lean on that understanding. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's part of the process of faith, that when something God says doesn't look as though it's going to work, I say, I trust God. I recognize His sovereignty. His plan will be successful. And I leave my feelings behind. With that being said, back to our statement. Come join us as we grow the church of God. What have we established so far? God is sovereign. It's to be done His way. We do not know better than God. When we consider this statement, the claim that is made by this particular religious group violates God's sovereignty and man's assigned work. Did you listen to the passage that Harold read to us? There on the day of Pentecost, exciting times. I hope maybe even next week we'll talk about that a little bit further. But did you notice what was said? The Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. The Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved. You see, in God's sovereignty and God's plan, God says the only way the church of God grows is when God grows the church. God is the one who does the adding. God is the one who makes the decisions. And when I try to take over that responsibility, I have passed the no trespassing sign. Now someone might say, is one statement on one radio commercial that big a deal? Is it that big a deal to think about this? In fact, there would be those, I am quite confident, who would go on and say, shouldn't we admire that zeal? Here are people who are wanting to bring people to Christ. Here are people who are wanting to save from the forces of Satan. And by all means, we need to have that attitude. We need to be zealous. But I remind you of what Paul says in Romans chapter 10. As he's talking about his own nation, his own people. He says in verse 1, brothers, my heart's desire and prayer to God for them is that they may be saved. For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For being ignorant of the righteousness of God and seeking to establish their own, they did not submit to God's righteousness. Paul says, my brethren have a zeal. They are a people who are zealous in what they're doing, but it's wrong. Because they're doing it without knowledge. Sometimes zeal can be viewed as more admirable than being right. And whenever we get to that situation, we say, yes, it is a big deal. Is one statement on one radio commercial that big of a deal? Yes. Because I believe in that statement, what we find is what is so symptomatic of modern day religion. Something that was experienced by Saul, something that was experienced by the people of Israel in Paul's day, and something experienced by us in that we have to beware of the attitude that God's plan is out of date and it must be changed. That what worked when God established the plan in the first century, will not work today. That's why I think this is a big deal. Because in this statement, we find very much the idea of the appeal to what comes to most people today in the idea of wanting entertainment, ease, and acceptance. Is that not what we find being preached, being hyped today? Come be a part of our group because we'll make sure you're not bored. We'll make sure that it's an easy thing. Hey, we'll have two or three times a day. You can dress like you want. You can do whatever you want. It's easy. And we will accept everyone despite what God has said. That is a danger. And that is one that we must understand is just as prevalent in our times as it has ever been. But now let me bring this down one step further. Is this statement a big deal? Yes. Because faithful Christians can be led astray by ideas that give the facade of success. A growing congregation is an exciting time. When a church is adding to its numbers physically, there is an excitement about that, and I think that's a good thing. However, if we are growing in ways that God has not authorized, we're in trouble. I can look at people who I have known and who I know, who at one point in their life, I would have said probably are some of the most solid people I've ever known spiritually, who have gone after these things that we've talked about this morning. It is a danger. Because it's often difficult to go through the hard work of God when the easy ways of man appear to get the same results. You know, my guess is this morning, if we had taken out a full-page ad in the Huntsville Times and we said free chocolate bunnies to every child who comes to Bible class this morning, we would have had an uptick, wouldn't we? Much more so than an ad that says Bible classes for all ages. So why not? Why not? Aren't we getting kids in? Aren't we getting their families in? Isn't that a good thing? Remember King Saul? I felt compelled. I felt like this was the right thing to do. God said, you're losing your kingdom. God is very serious when it comes to obeying His way. God is very serious when He says to us, I am sovereign. My way is to be followed. Don't think you can outguess me. So what do we do? Let me tell you. It's awfully easy to get up and condemn something that's wrong and then leave the right thing undone, isn't it? It's often time for us to kind of tisk at others and say, that's not correct, that's not right. Let me tell you something. Inaction is just as wrong as the wrong kind of action, isn't it? Where we sit back and we say, well, we're not doing this and we're not doing that and we're good and we're fine, but yet we're not doing what God has said to do, we're just as wrong. So what do? We go back and we look and we see where God has said, you preach the word. You make sure that what you're preaching is right. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning in verse 18. For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. Could God have started social outwork programs? Absolutely. Could God have started things of excitement and entertainment to bring people in? Sure He could have, but what did He say? It's through the folly or the foolishness of preaching that I want you to go out and to save the world. We preach. And I would suggest to you as well, we shine. We're going to find a whole lot more people interested in what we have to say if we are living what we say. Isn't that what we find in Matthew 5? the Lord giving these instructions. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and do what? Glorify your Father who is in heaven. You see, when I am obeying God in the way God has instructed me to act, in the things God has told me to teach, I am letting my light shine, and others will see that. So we preach, and we shine, and we answer. 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15 does not say you've got to know everything that could possibly be known about the Bible in case somebody asks you a question about anything within the Scriptures. No. Peter says, sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and always be ready to give an answer or a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. Somebody says to you, why is it that you go to church? Why is it that you take care of those people? Why is it that you're doing all of that? And you say, it's because I have a hope of heaven. Let me tell you about it. When we preach, and when we shine, and when we answer, that's how we do our part. That's how we bring people to God. We do our work, and we let God do the rest. What then is Apollos? What is Paul? Servants through whom you believed as the Lord assigned to each, I planted. Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. Who grows the church of God? God grows the church of God. And what he says is, I want you to be workers to help bring people to me who I will save. And it's not through our feeble efforts that salvation is given. It is through the grace of God that salvation is given. But we do our part, and we leave everything else to God.